Chapter 8, September 1817. September arrived with the swiftness of a runaway carriage, in that he had barely been aware of it on the horizon before it was barreling into him and flattening him into the road. Everything had been prepared that could be. They had taken on extra staff, a number of them previously of Hertfew Abbey, and outfitted the footman in Mrs. Lennox's favored midnight blue and silver livery. The furniture to make the dormitories and classrooms and laboratories had been purchased and put into place, the pantry had been filled, and Mrs. White supplied with 3 kitchen maids. The staff had been assigned their areas. Childermas had helped greatly with this, knowing the Hertfew contingent's own strengths and preferences, and explaining these in his quick response to Segundus's letter, and Charles had known how to inquire sensitively to the new starts, a task which Segundus knew he would blush and stutter through. The young gentlemen, Mr. Hadley Bright, Mr. Purfoy, and Mr. Levy, had been settled into their own rooms, and Segundus had spent many pleasant evenings discussing with them his hopes for the school and their own areas of interest. He had known what was coming, he had drawn up his plan of the school day, the timetables, the curricula, the lesson plans, had even discussed with Mrs. White the meal plans to ensure students and staff would be as well nourished physically as they would intellectually. What he had not been entirely prepared for was the sheer chaos a dozen adolescent boys could bring upon a household in so short a time. Strange's protégés turned out to be little use in this respect, being not long out of boyhood themselves and easily caught up in the excitement. Segundus gave the first day up as a loss and let them all talk and get to know one another, deciding it was best to give them a little time to settle in. Once each new scholar had arrived and been greeted by him at the door, he largely kept to his chair by the fire in the parlor and overheard the conversations which came and went as the boys moved from parlor to their dormitories and back, sorting out their things and claiming spots for themselves in the common rooms. It seemed much different to his own first days at school, but then he had not been one of the first pupils at England's first school of magic. He took the occasional turn around the house, eyes open for any signs of anxiety or tears, but saw only excitement. The worry in his chest settled a little more each time, and he returned to the parlor. "Well, they seem a jolly bunch," Hadley Bright exclaimed, when a shout took all the boys running out to the garden. He was standing with his arms behind his back, looking out the window with keen eyes and a flush of excitement high on his cheeks. "They do," Segundus agreed. "It is nice to see such exuberance and enthusiasm, but I do hope they will be calmer when lessons start." In the face of such gleeful disorder, he was starting to doubt his own ability, to wonder if perhaps opening a school for several boys would have been a better idea if he had ever taught more than 3 pupils at a time. "Oh, no doubt, sir," Levy said from a seat at the window. "No day is as thrilling as the first. They will soon find the rhythm of the place, as will we." After breakfast the next morning, while the boys were still a little dull from sleep, Segundus laid out the plans for the year. During the first term, they would cover magical history. In the spring, they would add magical theory to the syllabus, and only in summer, when they had a good grounding in the subject, would they move on to practical magic. Throughout the year, they would also learn the English, arithmetic, and Latin they would study in any other school, along with a little dancing, courtesy of Mr. Levy. "It may be very well for a magician to shun dancing," he had said to Segundus some weeks before, "but we are also educating gentlemen, and gentlemen must be able to dance." The students seemed a little disappointed by this, but Segundus understood their feelings and explained his reasoning as best they could, and in the end they seemed pacified, if not exactly pleased. In their place, he too would be most looking forward to casting spells of his own. He had been in that place for 30 years, but knew that at 12 years of age, 6 months can feel like 30 years. After that first day, the weeks flew by at a speed of knots. The school found its rhythm, boys and masters both, and although the unbridled exuberance had thankfully settled into something more sedate as everyone grew used to the schedule of lessons and mealtimes and trips to the village church on a Sunday, the enthusiasm for magic remained. Before Segundus knew it, they were into the third week of the month, and the Wednesday drew him to York. He was slightly concerned about leaving the school in the care of his 3 junior masters so near the start of term, but Hadley Bride and Purfoy cheerfully told him not to worry. What could go wrong with 2 days? Levy had been more reassuring, reminding him of the rules, and that anyway Mrs. White was unlikely to let them get away with very much in the way of trouble, either the students or the masters. So Segundus left for York, resisting the urge to chew at his fingernails for the whole journey, but often casting his eye into the small silver basin he had brought with him, filled with as little water as he could get away with. Nothing, at least, was on fire when he checked. They arrived at the Old Star Inn, and leaving Davy to see to the carriage and the horses, and then to his own devices until the morning, Segundus stopped only long enough to leave his things in his room before taking the short walk to Lady Peckett's yard. "Mr. Segundus," Mrs. Pleasance cried when she opened the door, "don't you look well?" She looked almost ready to embrace him. "And you, madam," he replied, smiling and giving her a small bow. "Oh, come in, come in." She ushered him inside and to the small table at which he had eaten so many meals. "I was so pleased to get your letter, Mr. Segundus." As she spoke, she moved around the kitchen, pulling down plates and cups, dishing out food, and setting a fragrant loaf of bread on the table. "I always like to know how my lodgers are doing, even if they're no longer under my roof. And you have done well for yourself, sir. I always knew you would, you know. I was just saying to my sister the other week of how you were always so hard at work studying and then teaching, and that good was bound to come of such determination, even with everything that miserly man took from you."
"You are too kind, Mrs. Pleasance. Have you any lodger now?"
"Oh, yes, I have a young lady who is very keen on magic herself, a Miss Fry. She is looking for work as a governess. Poor thing, parents, dad, and her aunt and uncle threw her out as soon as she turned 18, but she's making the most of things." Over lunch, he recounted how the school was doing, how it was different to what he had imagined, how he was constantly surprised by the sharpness of his pupils, how he was pleased by their perplexing questions and their talent at getting him to think of things from angles that would never have occurred to him. He heard her news of her family and her lodgers, of the various goings-on in York, of their shared friends and acquaintances, heard much of her nephew's law career in Manchester. As he heard more of Miss Fry, he persuaded Mrs. Pleasance to encourage the young lady to attend the society, that he was sure Miss Redruth would be pleased to have some more female company at the meetings. By the time he had to say his goodbye, he felt much more at ease than he had in weeks, and was more than ready to head off to the commotion of the society meeting. The Old Star Inn was much busier upon his return. He slipped through the crowds waiting for the meeting downstairs and went to his room to collect his papers. His conversation with Mrs. Pleasance had put him in a bright mood, and the prospect of updating the society with news of the school was weighing less heavily on him than it had on the carriage ride. He did not return to the downstairs bar, but instead went straight to the long room. There were already a few familiar faces assembled. Dr. Foxcastle, Mr. Taylor, and Mr. Hurt had arrived early to claim the best seats, and were glowering at where Mr. Honeyfoot was speaking to someone in the back of the room, still in coat and hat. Honeyfoot spotted Segundus quickly. As soon as he did, his face split into a wide grin. "Why, here he is now," he cried. "Mr. Segundus!" He waved Segundus over, and Segundus walked towards him, unable to stop his smile at the warmth of his friend's greeting. Mr. Honeyfoot stepped past the gentleman he had been speaking with to shake Segundus's hand in both of his, warm and firm. "Here is our schoolmaster. It's good to see you, my friend. It has been too long by half. I had hoped to visit you sooner, but with—" "And it's wonderful to see you, Mr. Honeyfoot," Segundus found himself forced to interrupt, knowing that Honeyfoot would go on in the same vein until he was stopped. "And I know you have been busy. How is Catherine? I hope she is quite recovered. How does it feel to have yet another lady in the family?"
"Oh, she's very well. She and little Isabella both."
"Oh," Honeyfoot beamed, "but she is a delightful little creature. You will have to meet her the next time you are all in town. I'm sure she will prove an excellent influence on her cousins." A wash of serenity passed over Honeyfoot's face, a condition Segundus had often heard of in grandparents, as if he had fallen into a reverie of young Isabella's many good attributes. Segundus glanced away for a moment to find Honeyfoot's previous partner in conversation looking at them with an amused tilt to his mouth.
"Mr. Childermass!" Segundus cried, jerking Honeyfoot out of his daydream. "We did not expect you. What a wonderful surprise!"
He managed to extract his hand from Honeyfoot's and extended it to Childermass, who shook it firmly.
"I wasn't sure we'd get here in time. As you know, we were held up by the business in Gouthurst, but we managed to get here this afternoon."
He looked around the room and scowled.
"Have you seen Vinculus?"
Segundus was about to say that no, he had not, when Vinculus's unmistakable cackle sounded from the stairs. Childermass's shoulders seemed to drop a little, and he turned a wry smile on Segundus.
"I'm afraid I've disappointed these gentlemen." He nodded to the three men by the fireplace.
"How this time?" Segundus asked, giving Childermass a smile of his own.
"I believe they had hoped they would have a meeting without either myself or Vinculus present." Childermass laughed, short and low. "We bring down the tone, apparently."
"Stuff and nonsense," Honeyfoot interjected. "We're lucky to have you, and anyone who says otherwise is a pompous fool." Childermass turned a look on Honeyfoot then that was strange in its rarity. His mouth remained as wry as ever, but a look of surprised gratitude passed over his eyes and his brow so quickly that Segundus almost missed it. Honeyfoot seemed not to have seen it at all, but Childermass inclined his head towards him in a slight nod.
"That is kind of you to say, sir, but I hardly think Dr. Foxcastle will be convinced any time soon."
There was something strange in his face then, and Segundus found himself studying it. His habitual wry mouth presented a hint of self-deprecation, but there was pride in his eyes and a straightness to his spine, a knowledge that he was above the self-important men sitting on the dais.
His eyes flicked away from Honeyfoot and caught Segundus's gaze, held it for a long moment as his smile turned into something that included Segundus in that assessment, one eyebrow rising up his forehead as if to say, "We are the only men in this room with any sense of purpose." Segundus felt himself returning that smile, felt it creep slowly along his lips, until he was snapped back to attention when he realized that Honeyfoot had asked him a question.
"I'm sorry, Mr. Honeyfoot, what was that?"
he asked, feeling his cheeks heating.
"It does get so noisy in here."
The clamor of the room was indeed growing, as the magicians who had gathered downstairs made their way into the room for the meeting, chatting and arguing all the while. Mr. Honeyfoot agreed that it was a terrible rabble and repeated his inquiry into the settling of the school. Segundus answered honestly, that it had been more difficult than he had imagined, but was a constant surprise and joy to him to see his students learning even over so short a time, but found himself a little nervous as he spoke, feeling Childermas's gaze on him, knowing he was listening to every word. The meeting was called to order shortly after, and Segundus gave his update on the school to the assembled crowd, followed by Mr. Thorpe's paper on magical methods of cotton spinning. Neither man was greeted with anything more than the amount of attention that could be considered polite, the room buzzing with the anticipation and restless energy that tended to overtake the society when the members noticed the presence of Childermas and Vinculus. Once Mr. Thorpe had finished, Childermas opened the floor to any magicians present who wished to study the Book of the Raven King. Vinculus practically slid off his stool as the room turned a cheery kind of chaos around him, pulling off his shirt when he got to the middle of the room. A crowd of magicians swarmed around him. It was the first time in months he and Childermas had attended the society, and began scribbling eager notes and shouting in support or derision of each other's theories. Segundus kept his seat, preferring to study Vinculus with Childermas in peace and quiet when they visited Staircross, and instead talked to Mr. Thorpe about his paper and Mr. Honeyfoot about his new granddaughter and the research he had begun on medical magic. From the corner of his eye, he kept track of Childermas moving around the edges of the room, watching the hive of activity around Vinculus, talking to Miss Redruth, whose earnestness and passion was evident even from across the room. Even now and then, Childermas would catch his eye, watching him in turn for a moment or two before looking back to whoever was trying to keep his interest. The evening proceeded with a swiftness that Segundus was unused to with the society, and before long the magicians were filing out of the room, and Childermas was shoving Vinculus's shirt against his chest. His lower half was never studied when Miss Redruth was present, by silent agreement of the gentlemen, and with not-so-silent belligerence from Miss Redruth, who felt that whatever lay beneath a man's breeches should be no barrier to her study of the Book of the Raven King, the noblest undertaking she could conceive. With much handshaking and reminders to visit, Segundus said his goodnight to Mr. Honeyfoot, making his friend promise to write to tell him when Catherine and her husband would be visiting from Leeds so he could finally meet little Isabella. Dr. Foxcastle and the rest of the committee slipped out with no small amount of grumbling, and then Segundus was left alone with Childermas and Vinculus, the latter snoring in Foxcastle's usual chair. The sudden quiet of the room was a relief, and Segundus took a deep breath as if he could inhale it. "You have rooms?" Childermas asked, sliding into a chair with a sigh. Segundus sat next to him, taking a moment to appreciate the peace. His ears were still ringing a little from the conversations and arguments that had until so recently filled the air. "I do, just upstairs." Saying it made his ears burn, as if he were betraying some great secret instead of letting a friend know about his lodging arrangements. Childermas just looked at him, a little sideways, and gave a slow nod.
"By the sounds of it, Mr. Honeyfoot would be pleased to save you the cost of the room."
Childermas spoke slowly, that once infuriating, ironic smile stretching over his lips.
"Oh, I couldn't impose on them so regularly," said Segundus, shaking his head. "Particularly not when they are so often visited by their family."
"I hope, then, sir, that you do not see Vinculus and my visit to Staircross as an imposition."
The sly twist still hung around Childermas's mouth, and Segundus found himself blushing.
"Indeed not," he objected, even as he knew he was being teased.
"You should know that I look forward to your visits most keenly, Mr. Childermas."
"I thought," Childermas said, his smile slow as treacle, "I had asked you to call me John."
The statement had a very peculiar effect on Segundus. It froze his breath in his lungs and turned his inside swirling, as if his guts had been transformed into a flock of roosting starlings. The room seemed very quiet, with only Vinculus's snores and the muffled sounds from the bar downstairs, and Segundus's pulse seemed suddenly very loud in his ears. There seemed less space in the room, less air, as if the walls had shrunk inwards, and most of the remaining space seemed to be filled by Childermas's large, dark eyes, regarding him with a shrewd kind of intensity. The room was dark and growing darker as the candles around the walls and on the tables reached their ends after hours of burning, one by one. Only the fire beside them cast a steady glow, softening the sharp edges of Childermas's smile, shining in his eyes. It was a comforting light, hiding more than it illuminated. Segundus felt a movement within him, the box he so carefully kept tightly locked and tucked away. It was the snick of a key, the scrape of a latch. It was the cool brush of a bare foot against his own. There was no sunlight here now to frighten such thoughts away. "I hope," he stammered, his mouth suddenly dry, and he found he was unable to look away. He swallowed, throwing all the weight he could against the lid of that box. "I hope the reason you have not visited these last few months is not because you have felt unwelcome." Childermas laughed at this, low and rough, and pulled his pipe from his breast pocket, finally pulling his gaze from Segundus, freeing him from whatever spell had been placed on him. "You needn't worry about that, Mr. Segundus," he said, casting a quick glance back as he lit his pipe. "London is a needy mistress, the minister is even more so." "Mr. Segundus, is it?" Segundus asked, his grip slipping. So quietly, he was surprised when Childermas looked at him. Childermas gave a deep sigh, and together they watched the plume of smoke curl up towards the ceiling. The tendrils of gray smoke, caught by the light of the dying fire and the low candles, seemed to spell something out in some ancient language. The meaning of it was almost clear to Segundus. He almost reached his hand up to touch it, but pulled himself back at the last moment, tucked his hair behind his ear instead. The bowl of Childermas's pipe flared as he took another draw, illuminating the amber in his eyes where they rested on Segundus's temple, and on his next exhale the scent of tobacco reached Segundus's nostrils, warm and sweet and full. "You are always welcome," he said, not aware he was going to speak until the words were out. "Always." He looked over, and the sight of Childermas held his gaze. There was something in his eyes, something more naked than Segundus was used to seeing in him, something open and vulnerable that hurt a little to look at. He looked tired, Segundus realized, and wondered how many days he had spent traveling. He knew well that from Kent to York was no small journey. Within the cage of Segundus's ribs came the clatter of a chest thrown open. Childermas took his pipe in his hand and opened his mouth to speak, but started a little as Vinculus let out a great snort and woke with a jump. Segundus blinked, swallowed, stepped away from the edge in Childermas's eyes, still a little dizzy with vertigo. "What's this?" the book asked, looking around accusingly, as if he suspected someone of dumping a bucket of cold water over him or pinching him viciously. Segundus sympathized.
"Time is it?"
He squinted at Childermas, who was already on his feet and scowling.
"Time we were gone," he answered, gruff, chewing on the bit of his pipe. "Off to bed with you."
He turned and sketched a rough bow.
"Good night, Mr. Segundus."
"You should visit soon," said Segundus, rising to return Childermas's bow. "I would like you to see the school, meet the pupils. Your rooms are as they have always been, and are always ready." The frown that had creased Childermas's face when Vinculus had snorted awake eased as he looked at Segundus in the fading firelight. He was little more than a shadow at the door, the orange glow in the bowl of his pipe somehow casting him further into darkness by comparison. He nodded once and stepped back, disappearing into the gloom of the corridor. Segundus stood for some time in the room, uncomfortably aware of the beat of his heart, at once unaccountably irritated with Vinculus and immensely glad for his presence. It was only when the maid came into the room and looked surprised to see him that he left and climbed the stairs to his room. That night it took Segundus a long while to get to sleep, unused as he now was to the noise of a city street outside his window, with his mind busy with his conversations from the meeting, with the autumn air making his bed seem so cold despite the fire. When he did sleep, he dreamed of laughing ravens and dark liquid eyes lit by the flare of a pipe.